Welcome to Watchmen on the Wall, a daily outreach of Southwest Radio Ministries and SWRC.com. God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. Today, Dennis Cuddy continues his look behind the curtain of the Great Reset. And then a little later, biblical archaeologist Clayton Van Hus will help us stay biblically grounded. Each year, we produce a calendar to raise funds for our prison ministry. The special ministry provides Bibles, resources, prayer, and encouragement to prisoners across the country. This year, our calendar's theme is Beyond the Veil. Created by Marginal Mysteries host Micah Van Hus, the Beyond the Veil 2026 calendar includes stunning imagery, the major Jewish holidays, a guide for reading through the Bible in a year, and the special Get One, Give Two initiative. That means for every calendar you order, we provide two free calendars for the incarcerated folks through our prison ministry. This calendar, with its one-of-a-kind images, is perfect for daily encouragement, Bible study inspiration, and during the Christmas season, a meaningful gift. Order your Beyond the Veil calendar today when you call 1-800-652-1144. That's 1-800-652-1144. You can also order on our website, swrc.com, and we have very special discounts for folks that order multiple calendars. This year's calendar is truly one that you don't want to miss out on. Order your calendars today. 1-800-652-1144. Here's our host, Dr. Larry Spargimino, and his guest, author Dennis Cuddy.
We're back with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. In our previous program, we were speaking with Dr. Cuddy about his new book, Conspiracy 3. And I will say nothing else because he's got so much more to tell us today. So, Dr. Cuddy, it's so good to have you with us. And I understand you've got a couple of basic comments about your earlier works, and you also want to speak about the preface in this new book. So go ahead, sir, and tell us what's on your heart.
Okay. In terms of today, there is a secret communist plan coming to fulfillment. The communist theoretician Antonio Gramsci said, people don't like these bloody revolutions, so we're going to take over the culture. And they have. They have. And there's a secret Nazi plan also that's coming into fulfillment. Now, the first thing I want to say is in that book, The Power Elite and the Secret Nazi Plan, I have gotten information since that was published. For example, if you asked anybody what happened to Hitler, they all say, well, he's killed or committed suicide in the bunker. However, by 2007, DNA had been developed. And so this New England pathologist, I think his name was Badaloni, if I haven't mispronounced that, he went over there and said, can I have a teeny, tiny little piece of the skull? It was charred, you know, real charred. And they said, okay, a little teeny piece. He brought it back and found that it was really the skull of a woman in her 30s. So it couldn't have been Hitler.
Right.
So he actually survived. And I have a tape here of him in Argentina Deep. What happened was people would look in the National Archives for information on Hitler. They wouldn't find it. You have to look on the U-boats, that's their submarines. The submarines would drop these Nazis all along the coast, and they would go deep, and some would go into Buenos Aires, you know, have, I actually put a picture of a joint bank account between Juan Perón and these people to prove, like I said, primary documents, to prove that these people didn't die. They thought Martin Bormann had died at the railroad tracks. No, he didn't die at the railroad tracks. The Nazis had, they were very, very evil, but masterminds, really masterminds. They would have a specific Stalag, and their job would be to create false images, you know, false people.
Right.
There's a book by a very good British newspaper guy, The Strange Death of Heinrich Mueller. And the reason he says strange death is that the dueling scar doesn't match, the dental work doesn't match. So a lot of these people who are supposedly dead really weren't dead. They survived a long time. And there were two, I'm actually getting too far into the book. If you want to, you can read that book. I wrote that in 2010. You can also buy that from the ministry. You can do
wow.
that. So we'll finish with that. Now, on the preface of Klaus Schwab's book, I put on the front the picture of the person and then a famous quote.
Right.
But Klaus Schwab, in my opinion, he doesn't look very bright. He was picked because of his stature and so forth and so on. But I often like to say, behind these famous men often is a woman. Behind Bill Clinton, for example, is Hillary. And you remember, at one point she said, we are the president. So, I mean, she was, you know, admitting that. So they're handlers. So Hildy, his wife, is the one with the brains. She's the one that, for example, I haven't been able to prove this, but there has been some suggestion that she was related to Hitler and that whole family. But you'll read about it in the preface
right.
of the current book with Klaus Schwab on the cover. Okay, that's my comment about those two things.
Well, as I was reading your book, I was thinking of what are the things that has to happen for people to accept world government is that there, what should I say, has to be a diminishing of patriotism, you know, love
yes.
for any country.
Absolutely.
In fact, we see it now. People hate America, even Americans who were born here. Tell us a little bit about that, and how is that really orchestrated? It's not accidental, but the people who are pushing and pulling the strings know what they're doing.
Yeah, but they don't want it to be obvious. They don't want
yes.
the people to find out what they're doing. So in the 60s, for example, as you moved more and more away from a Christian nation, you would have the slogans, you know, what's in it for me, look out for number one, and so forth and so on. And people thought this was the radical left. However, there was an infiltration by an FBI member, and he wrote it up later called the Strawberry Statement. You know, strawberry, like the Beatles, Strawberry Fields, forever, and so forth. He infiltrated them. And what he found out was it wasn't controlled by the left. It was really controlled by the right. Business Roundtable International wanted to make the left, the hippies, appear so far left that as they moved leftward, people wouldn't notice it. For example, people often look at President Nixon as a conservative. He really wasn't. One of the first pieces of legislation that he sponsored when he became a member of the House, voted in 1946, was to give more authority to the U.N. That is not a conservative position. And he did some other things that would indicate that he wasn't all that conservative. Even the person I worked for, Ronald Reagan, I was a problem solver for Reagan. He wasn't all that conservative. He was controlled. For example, when I looked at the convention, when he was nominated and won in 1980, the convention, he was happy Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. And then on Thursday, when he was to make his announcement for vice president, he looked very somber. Something had happened to him. And he says, my nominee is George H.W. Bush. And then the camera switches over to George Bush. And I remember him. He was rubbing his hands together like some silent screen villain like that. And I found out what happened was on Wednesday night, Henry Kissinger paid him a private visit and said, you do want to nominate Bush, don't you? Hint, hint. And in other words, if you want to be president and not have something happen to you or whatever, you will do that because that's what we want. And he will control foreign policy. He will control foreign policy. And Reagan really wasn't all that conservative either. When he was governor of California, he had a rather liberal abortion policy out there. And so things are not always what they seem. Whoever it is, whether it's Trump or, anybody, these presidents are controlled. They're really controlled. Sometimes they're not controlled psychologically, but they're blackmailed. They're
right.
blackmailed into doing. In fact, the power elite loves to get people for president, powerful positions, who they can get something on. They have to hold
right.
something over them. And so that's one way this happens. And one way, as I said, in the late 60s, they appeared to be leftists, but they really weren't. The people behind it were Business Roundtable International.
Wow. At the present time, I look at President Trump, but now we have the Gulf of America. Mount McKinley, the name had been changed. I forget what it had been changed to, but now it's Mount McKinley once again. And this whole idea of MAGA, Make America Great Again. I do believe that America's a great place. How does President Trump fit into this? I mean, is he being controlled? Is that why there's so much pressure against him? Because people inside don't like what he's saying?
Yeah, he's controlled. Let me explain it to you this way. Trump is an international businessman. Okay, so before he became president, he would travel all over the place. And let's say he traveled to Moscow, right? If you go to a hotel in Moscow, you don't get some random room. You get a very specific room, which has listening devices in the curtains, hidden video cameras, and so forth. And there's often, in your next to you, this girl who's really 17, but she looks like 27, and she says, "Hello, can you please help me with my door?" You know, like this. To be perfectly honest, Trump has been sexually active in the past. And so what they're doing is set up. And I remember he, in his first administration, he was very, very critical of Kim Jong-il or Un, or whichever the son is. He was very critical, and all of a sudden it stopped. He stopped. You didn't hear him complain about him anymore. And I saw that Putin had given a brown envelope to that Korean leader, and that was when it was stopped. What I imagine happened is the Russians had taped blackmailable stuff on Trump and given it to the leader of North Korea, and that's why he stopped. Again, the same thing with Bill Clinton. And it's not just a Republican. Bill Clinton, you know, Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar. He would be traveling around, and he would take a trip to Russia, right? Now, he went to Georgetown, which is another interesting feature of historical knowledge. Why would a Southern Baptist boy from Arkansas go to a Jesuit institution? Because they wanted to set him up to become president. Georgetown was John Foster Dulles' son, Avery Dulles, who had become a Catholic cardinal. And it was also his mentor. Clinton's mentioned it. He admitted, "My mentor is Carol Quigley." And he was a teacher of history and Western civilization. Clinton admired him very much. And Quigley wrote a book called Tragedy and Hope. Big, thick book. And the tragedy was that the average person like you and I ran the affairs of our government. The hope was that the elite, the smart guys would do it. And this goes on back way, way back to Plato, you know, the philosopher king.
There's a lot of documentation, a lot of good history, a lot of evidence that you can find. Not all made up. So once again, 1-800-652-1144. And I want to encourage our listeners to go to our website, swrc.com. We've got more books, more videos. We've got announcements about our conferences, about the dates, about who the speakers are. So just check us out and see what our ministry is doing. We're into a lot of stuff. We have a lot of new departments. And you will really be blessed with what Southwest Radio Church is doing at the present time. So the phone number, 1-800-652-1144. Now, Dr. Cuddy, you say that during your senior year in high school, 1963 and 64, you were assigned to portray the famous historian Arnold Toynbee. He was an important member of Cecil Rhodes' Association of Helpers, quote, to take the government of the whole world. And then you got to see that the goal of Cecil Rhodes and the power elite was dialectically to synthesize Western capitalism and Eastern communism. Now, tell us how that works and where do we see that today?
Yeah, well, you see that in a lot of different ways. When you synthesize something, you know, you synthesize the far left and far right, and you can have the world socialist government. what that plays out as is compromise. You're constantly compromising and compromising and compromising. And so there's not a direct assault on Christianity, you know, but a watering down of it. So it's not apparent. You know, you don't see it full-fledged. And then you have to have important leaders. For example, it's not just the world government, world economy. They want a one-world religion. And so a Bishop Swing, he was an Episcopal bishop, was in charge of that, a one-world religion. And they had the first, I forget what the title is, but it was 1893, regarding a one-world religion. And Cecil Rhodes, his ally, they call it his pal now, but they say Pall Mall Gazette, was in charge of that and describing what they were doing. And then they held another one in 1993, you know, 100-year anniversary to do that. So it's very important to look at these religions. I don't know if I put these in books. I've written about 1,000 published articles. But I show how a long time ago you would have, let's say, the Rockefellers. And the Rockefellers funded the University of Chicago, right? University of Chicago. They purpose to establish a religious control. And so what I've done in articles, I've shown how that applies to Methodists, Baptists, Catholics, and so forth. They've had a plan to do each one of those. For example, in terms of Catholics, that was a venture towards homosexuality. The Curia, which is the ruling body in the Vatican, is full of homosexuals. I mean, it is full of homosexuals. And then Baptists, you would have the first book that I have found that was titled The New World Order. It was published by the American Baptist Association in, I think it was 1919. And it's all about how you have to compromise. You have to compromise to have a world government. The plans involve religion and work.
Right.
When I was in Washington, I was at the National Institute of Education, which is the premier research and run research funding agency there. If you watch the language, you can see the language, how it changes. It used to be in the 1960s. I remember people would say, Dennis, what do you think about this? What do you think about it? They didn't do that in Washington. They said, how do you feel about it? How do you feel? And because feelings can be manipulated. So there's a psychological point in all of this in terms of one world religion, the Baptist, the Methodist. And there's this little book printed by the Methodist and to show what they would be doing. And so they got the Methodist to such an extent controlled that the Planned Parenthood office in Washington, D.C. is in the Methodist building. It used to be all Christians were pretty much against abortion. In fact, Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, first feminists, published in the middle 1800s, in which they said abortion is child murder.
Wow.
And it was very clear. But once you water down people's commitment, you quicken the pace of human life, get the men and women at odds, and, you know, one uses the other and so forth and so on. It's a very slow process, goes back 200 years, how they've thought this out all the way to today to ruin or destroy, was their goal, Christianity.
Amen. Well, the point you made, you know, you spoke about, well, how do you feel? You talk about Debbie Boone recorded the popular You Light Up My Life. The lyrics were, it can't be wrong when it feels so right. So this is basically saying that how one feels about a female-male relationship is more important than whether it might be morally right or wrong. Well, Dr. Cuddy, we are just about out of time, but we've got one more program to do, and we're looking forward to having you back with us.
Thank you.
What if the global crises shaking our world aren't accidents, but part of a carefully crafted plan? In Dennis Cuddy's brand new book, Conspiracy 3, uncover the chilling connections between Klaus Schwab, the legacy of Nazi ideology, and the push for a one-world government. From pandemics to political chaos, this explosive book explores how world powers may be using the classic Hegelian dialectic, problem, reaction, solution, to manipulate society into accepting the so-called Great Reset. Conspiracy 3 by Dennis Cuddy. Order your copy today when you call 1-800-652-1144. That's 1-800-652-1144. Or you can order on our website, swrc.com. If you've ever suspected there's more to the headlines than meets the eye, Dennis Cuddy's book, Conspiracy 3, will confirm your instincts and open your eyes. 1-800-652-1144. Time to get biblically grounded with archaeologist Clayton Van Hus.
Christmas time is upon us once again, and today I want to talk about a part of the Christmas story that we like to put off to the side. We don't like to remember it. It's an incident that is known as the Massacre of the Innocents. It is recorded in Matthew chapter 2, verses 16 to 18. Matthew chapter 2 talks about the wise men. The wise men, the magi, who came to the house in Bethlehem, and they brought gifts for Jesus. But they were warned in a dream to not go back to Herod, because they had initially gone to King Herod and asked him where to find the new king of the Jews. Herod said, "Well, when you find him, let me know so that I can worship him too." But they were warned in a dream not to return. And then, of course, Joseph was warned in a dream. That's where we have the flight to Egypt. In Matthew 2, 16 through 18, we read that when Herod realized he had been tricked, that he had the children. The word used for children there is a Greek word that usually, pais, it usually means boy, but it can mean other children. But likely this was the boys. He had all of the boys, 2 years of age and under, put to death. That is a very difficult thing. Historians question, was Herod capable of such a heinous act? Well, we'll find out. Was this just mythology written by Matthew? Or is this something that actually happened? So Herod the Great, there's some disagreement about the dates of his reign. So that's why we sometimes have a hard time dating the birth of Jesus exactly. He was from Idumea, or biblical Edom. He was the son of Antipater the Idumean and a Nabatean princess. The Nabateans were from the area of Petra. So he was king of Judea. He murdered a number of his political opponents who he thought maybe were threats to his throne. He backed Mark Antony in the civil war between Mark Antony and Octavian, the nephew and adopted son of Julius Caesar. Of course, if you know your Shakespeare, you know the story of Antony and Cleopatra. Antony did not win that war. He ended up dead. Herod, having backed Mark Antony, his friend, decided to flee straight to Rome, to Octavian, now Caesar Augustus, and he pled with him for his life. In fact, he cited his loyalty to his friend Mark Antony and said, "If you will keep me, I will be just as loyal to you, Octavian," or Caesar Augustus, and he was allowed to keep his throne. He was famous, known as Herod the Great for his many building projects, places like Caesarea Maritima, the Roman capital of Judea, the Temple Mount expansion. He did a lot of work on the Temple Mount, a lot of palace fortresses, Masada, Herodium, Alexandrium, all sorts, Macarus, Jericho, all sorts of building projects. But he was famous for being very fearful, for getting rid of threats to his throne. In fact, he executed a number of his own family members out of fear that they would usurp his throne. His wife, his favorite wife, Marianne, he had her executed. He executed 3 sons, Antipater II, Alexander, and Aristobulus IV. Augustus is claimed to have said that it is better to be Herod's swine than his son. Now, this was a pun in the Greek, because the word swine, ous, and the word son, huios. This was a pun. It's better to be Herod's swine than his son, because he would not eat swine, being a practicing Jew. He called for the execution of religious leaders upon his own death. He said, when he died, he said, kill all these religious leaders. And thankfully, that command was not followed through. What he wanted was for the people to mourn when he died, and he knew that they would not mourn his own passing. Was he capable of executing anyone he thought was in the way of his throne? Yes, he was absolutely capable. In fact, his palace at Herodium, if you've ever visited there, overlooks the little town of Bethlehem. You can go to Bethlehem, there's a hotel, you can go up to a platform, and you can look out at Nativity Square, where the Church of the Nativity is, and Herodium looms in the background, built out of an old volcano, kind of like Mount Doom, overlooking Bethlehem. And you kind of wonder, was Herod there on this mountain when he made this order to kill the boys? And people say, well, it would have been recorded in history, perhaps, but why was it not recorded? Well, with all of the things that Herod did, all the people being killed and executed, maybe a half dozen boys under the age of 2 years old lived in Bethlehem at that time. Hardly a footnote in the reign of someone like Herod the Great. It's likely that something like that just would not have been important enough for secular historians to record, but fits right into the Christmas story for Matthew to record when we read of Rachel and the weeping from Ramah. The weeping in Bethlehem that night as the boys were slaughtered. This is very likely a thing historically to have happened, and the Bible records that it did indeed happen.
Friends, I want to encourage all of our new listeners to request your free new listener pack. The new listener pack includes the latest issue of our Prophetic Observer newsletter and a free gift. Request your free new listener pack when you call 1-800-652-1144. And make sure everyone downloads our free SWRC mobile app. On the app, you'll find archived episodes of Watchmen on the Wall and the Prophecy in the News television program. Marginal Mysteries, Moment of Prophecy, and Biblically Grounded are all found on the SWRC mobile app. Take us with you on your smartphone or tablet. Download the SWRC mobile app today. Tomorrow, Dennis Cuddy will conclude his look at the connections of the Great Reset. Be sure to tune in by downloading our free SWRC mobile app. Watchmen on the Wall is a production of Southwest Radio Ministries and is supported by faithful listeners like you. Visit swrc.com to learn more. That's swrc.com.